Hi, this is Phil Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
A truly tremendous piece of music there. Jazz wonderment carried to the extreme by the awesomely talented Al Swanger. How are you, Al?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. Thank you for talking to me.
Excellent. Well, I mean, we've had sort of Bristol connections at all with Els Bailey. I don't know if you're familiar with Els. She's a songstress from Bristol who's done a whole range of things in a more sort of jazz rock mode, basically. But this is a much more cooler form of jazz. This is jazz to kind of relax to. It's jazz to unwind, to basically contemplate. Was that something which you deliberately had in mind when you just produced what we've just heard, effectively, The Shrug?
Yeah, so, I mean, this track specifically was about kind of non-verbal trauma, really, when you experience such sort of deep emotions regarding an event. And people are always very nice. They want to say, so how are you? How are you coping? And so on. But sometimes you're just not really able to talk. And so you look back and you give a shrug, and you need time to process and so on. So I wrote the track in response to one of those events with a friend quite some time ago. So I wanted to try and encapsulate that melancholy, but also to give it a bit of an optimism as the track went on, that that feeling doesn't stay with you forever. You do find your way through it and things do get better. Mm. So yeah, that was kind of the thinking behind this piece.
It's a wonderful case of how we sometimes sort of feel that it's never going to end, but it points out that music is such a vital part of our whole existence from that point of view. And I'm intrigued by the album title, of course, from which The Shrug is actually taken from, Hearts Full of Grace. Is that a sense that actually, yeah, we all have that genuine propensity for, you know, wonderment, etc., but sometimes we kind of just squeeze ourselves off from the wonder of creation, shall we say?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, as a phrase, it's taken from a much longer speech by Martin Luther King. But just as a phrase, all we need to serve is a heart full of grace and a soul full of love really stuck out to me. And I was looking at it in terms of, it doesn't matter who you are in life, we've all got some way to bring joy and something that we can offer to make other people's lives better. And that's got nothing to do with money or our day-to-day jobs or whatever. Those things might be part of that, but you know, whether it's offering to make someone a cup of tea or giving some money to the homeless person outside a supermarket or whatever it is, we all have that ability to improve the world in some way. Mm-hmm. And the lives that people live around us, and it's important to value and remember that and just sort of take stock of that now and again, I think.
Very much so. Now, jazz clearly has a multitude of meanings to a multitude of people. There are people who actually say they're more Dizzy Gillespie. There are other people who actually say they're more Satchmo. There are other people who would actually say they're more kind of upbeat, up-tempo jazz and so on. Jamie Cullen, dare I say. From your own perspective, what brought you first and foremost into jazz as an art form, as something which you really wanted to embrace and take on board, as opposed to, I don't know, becoming a country singer?
Well, I was very lucky growing up that there was a lot of music provision when I was at school. The education system was really strong and provided a lot of opportunities to make different kinds of music. And the schools that I went to had lots of different opportunities to make music in as well. But that said, you know, when I was, I think, 9 or 10, or just before I went to secondary school, the Devon Youth Jazz Orchestra played at the secondary school that I was going to go to, and I was knocked out with that. I mean, it was just such a performance. And also, they had a French horn in the band. I was playing French horn at the time. I was like, ooh, I can fit into this ensemble. I didn't realize that that was possible for me before. I thought it was just classical music. So I joined that, and then the secondary school that I went to, St. Thomas High School, also had a thriving jazz band there, a thriving music department, so I joined that. That was great. And I think I just kept – that was the music that really sparked me, was this just something about it. And then I discovered the library in town as well, and they had access to a vast range of recordings, so I would – do what I think a lot of people do, which is you read the sleeve notes and you see who's playing on that, and the you like someone's playing, so you check out another recording and you find out that all these players play together in different combinations, and so you've got this sort of tapestry that you gradually put together. And it was, if not free, it was very cheap, so I didn't have the financial impediment of actually buying lots of recordings. I could check things out for less than a pound, and so I just checked out everything. So I like stuff right across the board. The thing that holds jazz together for me is the idea of improvisation within it, the freedom of making something spontaneous on the spot. And I've enjoyed performing in all kinds of settings, and I still do. I play a lot of double bass in various things. So I was an Ulster Beatson tribute for a long time. I still play with Digby Fairweather, which is a much more traditional kind of setting. What I found I wasn't getting the opportunities to do were much more of the fusion end of things. So I'm also an electric bass player, and I loved Weather Report from an early age, and Return to Forever and all those kind of things. And I was never getting the opportunity to do those kind of things. So as a result, when I write music, I tend to write all the things that no one else is asking me to do. And this album includes elements from all over the place. Although this track is quite a sort of chilled out gospel thing. The track that follows it is much more sort of 1990s Miles Davis kind of decoy era, a lot more electric, not really any specific soloist. There's some soul influences, some stuff that's a bit more Kenny Wheeler, some stuff that's a bit Keith Jarrett maybe. So yeah, finding ways of blending technology and real people together is really interesting to me too.
Well, let's take a musical break now, if we may, Al, actually, because I'm going to give you a choice, actually. And this is going slightly back in terms of routines. We can offer you either the Pointless Beauty remix of Ocean Blue, or indeed What the Thunder Said, with, of course, Holly Mobley being featured there. Which one are you going to go for, What the Thunder Said or Ocean Blue?
Let's go with What the Thunder Said, because I can talk about some of the elements from that appear on the Hearts Full of Grace album.
Hey, it's me again. Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. I just have a lot to say. I'm often found arms up and shouting, because I have this fear of going unheard. I compensate a lot. I'm not flash like lightning is. I rarely feel seen. I put too much pressure on my sound. I always think I have to make it rhyme, sing, or be some reader profound. I found there is a high decibel to living. I speak to drown things out. 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 It's me again. If you think I'm loud, you should hear the voices in my head. I've been compared to a whip crack, but I prefer the term rebel. When I speak, there are no fighter planes landing, but there are skateboards about to hit the tray flip. I know I'm not as soft as rain. I can't say things gently, but why should I when the universe began with a hot shout? It took its first wet breath and said, open your doors, let the living in. All life begins with sound. To give me your cry, kick, your moan, laugh, your first pump of heart. This is how I like to see myself. Life descending over and over, I'm stitched with the same thread that wove the Big Bang. I'm clashing colours. I'm the question, are you really gonna wear that today? And the yes that follows. I'm not your god, but I heard he's up here, somewhere. People feel the same way about me as they do a wet dog shaking. I don't smell as bad. I'm not as far reaching, because right now there's a boy in his Playmobil house and he's crying. and I don't know how to comfort when the words don't work. So the more I speak, the more he cries. Boy, I don't know how to listen without trying to be the antidote, boy. I always take on so much and say too much, boy. I'm loud all the wrong times, boy. I repeat, this is the wrong time. How do you shout without raising your voice? How do you take the hand of a friend and whisper, this is what the thunder says. 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 How do you shout this without raising your voice, what the thunder says? How do you take the hand of a friend and whisper, this is what the thunder says? This is what the thunder says. How do you shout this without raising your voice, what the thunder says? How do you take the hand of a friend? How do you shout without raising your voice?
Excellent. You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren Radio. We've got the fantastic jazz performer, the impresario Al Swanger, with us, etc. We've just been listening to What the Thunder Said, and of course, Holly Mobley in there. And again, another wonderful track, Al. Again, sort of echoing the whole sort of magic of the mood and so on. And really, for something like myself, who has taken time to get into jazz. I mean, it's one of those things where I must admit, oh, jazz, that's for folk who are like in their 50s or 60s, actually. But in terms of all sorts of other areas, you've got that sort of zone where it's kind of become cool again. And I know the stations like Jazz FM kind of echoed that to a certain extent, but it was for a time, I think, and maybe you kind of crossed over that. There was a period where jazz was seen as though, well, that was all the 30s and 40s, etc., and it wasn't now. But jazz is something which does transcend the eras, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I think in some respects it's really unhelpful that the word jazz is used so all-encompassingly, because it covers over 100 years worth of music now. And you'd never do the same thing with pop. No one would say pop to mean everything from, you know, Bill Haley up to Sia or whatever we've got now. Yeah, exactly. We differentiate a lot more. And I think that's because it's much more in the public consciousness, because that's where the media focuses. But there's every bit as much variety in the jazz world. But without that sort of more mainstream access, I get people just aren't going to find out about that music.
And there is the argument that pure jazz in its purest form can't really be recorded. You know, it needs to almost be a sense, or if it is recorded, it kind of it's live. It needs to actually be experienced live. Really, I don't know. It's an interesting debate that I've heard some musicians actually turn around and say, oh, actually, yeah, it's just when you capture that, it's you can't quantify it, but you know it's actually there.
Yeah, I think probably much like pop or classical music or anything else, is live and studio experiences are very different. There's definitely a rawness and excitement to not knowing what's going to happen next on a jazz gig that you don't get in other styles of music.
Bit like What the Thunder Said, which brings us back to what we've just been listening to. So again, in terms of that, just talk us through the processes and how that kind of came into being.
Okay, so I mean, this is the flip side to that. This piece of music couldn't really have spontaneously occurred. It's very produced, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about how this will work. So it was part of a collaborative project. A couple in Bristol who are running a poetry collaboration thing where they invite poets to write in with their pieces of work, and then they weave music around it, and they do that live on their show. Open collaboration, that's what it's called, Charlie and they had this idea that it would be fun to invite another three musicians along, and we would all look at the same poem and interpret it in our own ways and just spend a couple of days putting it together and then send it back, and they would make an EP out of that. So yeah, there's three other versions of this track as well, all based around Holly's poem. And she sent in a live recording of her reading a poem, which is great, and she's the vocalist on the track as a result. And so because she performs it in quite a rhythmic way anyway, I was able to take that and form the music around it. And then I wanted the music to kind of represent what I perceived to be a narrative journey through that. So the several sections and the way that it moves on, I'm trying to capture the words. But it's still, all of my music comes from improvising. I'll sit down with a thing, I'll get an instrument, I'll play along to something, and I'll keep recording as I'm doing that. And so that would build up a whole bank of improvisations that I can reflect on and then cut back and until the track is formed. And I do, that's generally part of my strategy for making music, is to think about what is the story behind the track. So it's much more explicit when you've got words or a vocal. But I still make up and tell myself stories for all the instrumental stuff as well, because I think that helps guide you from A to B through a story, whether that's apparent to the person listening to it or not. And I kind of like with the instrumental stuff that it encourages people to tell their own stories and reflect on their own thoughts and what else has happened to them during their day.
Returning back to Hearts Full of Grace and the Shrug, I mean, the other thing that came to mind when I was listening to The Shrug and when we've heard it is it's very cinematic. I mean, I can see it actually coming across in terms of a movie theme, in terms of a line from that perspective. Is that something, again that you also have a sense of the visual when you're actually composing, when you're putting things together, that you think actually there are images? I mean, you've shared with us, obviously, the way it actually connects with people's emotional mood. But I'm thinking about, as say, that other area where we actually see the kind of the visual side of things and how that impacts the senses as well.
Yeah, so I mean, that comes up a lot when people are talking about my music. They describe it as being cinematic or something. So I've started calling my music cinematic fusion as a result, because these influences come from everywhere. I respond to things visually a lot, but I seem to have something that's called aphantasia, which is the inability to visualize things internally. So it most commonly turns up in terms of memory. If I go into the kitchen and I see a plate or something with a pattern on it, and I come out and I go back again, if someone switched the plate, I probably won't notice because I don't have that memory. So I think that has an effect on, I tend to think about things quite analytically. So to get around that problem, you describe things about the visual thing, and then you remember the description rather than the thing itself. Not having a visual memory, I have a limited idea of what it is that people who can visualize things do. But my sister has a photographic memory, so we have a really different perspective on things. But I've always been a huge fan of soundtracks and soundtrack music. So that language of emotion, I think, yeah, does occur visually as well as in sound.
Now, you obviously earned your chops by performing at venues such as Ronnie Scott's, the Royal Festival Hall, and so on and so forth, including obviously the London Jazz Festival and the Krakow Jazz Festival in Poland, no doubt. Any particular favourite places where you think, yeah, actually, I quite like Krakow, it was cool, you know, I like heading off there, or no, give me Ronnie Scott's every day of the week?
I mean, Krakow was lovely. They flew us out for a day. That was a Digby Fair with a gig. Yeah, we set off, I think, Sunday morning, got back Monday morning, something like that. They laid on a lovely spread for us, made us feel really, really welcome. The audience was really enthusiastic. So I think festivals in general are often really nice places to play at because people are up for party and so on. And you feel, generally well looked after and people want you to be there. Ronnie's obviously has got the whole history behind it as a venue, and it's an interesting place to go and play. It's a bit more reserved because everyone's seated and eating and the lights and so on. So it's just a different experience, but you know, you've got all that weight of history of all the other great players that have been there. So it's an honor to be there in that way. But yeah, anywhere where an audience is interested in your music, well, not just interested, but you know, is clearly enjoying it, and they want to come and talk to you afterwards. So, much as the sort of great venues and so on, they're fantastic to play in. I can have just as much fun in a gig in North Devon or wherever if the audience is really into it and they want to share that experience with you. That's what it's about.
Let's do a bit of time traveling. If you could actually go back in time to speak to the young Al Swanger, who was actually benefiting from obviously the musical skills and the things back in school, what advice, what life advice would you actually provide your younger self?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because you do know that you are where you are because of the way that you were and the experiences that you had. I think in general it would be, don't be so afraid to talk to people. People want to help more often than you think. And don't take it personally when people don't get back to you and they don't want to talk to you. So just be a bit braver, I think, in terms of contacting people and telling people who you are.
Makes perfect sense. Now, I notice on the socials, you're pretty much across most of them, apart from TikTok. Is TikTok something you've decided to avoid, or is it just something that you're still thinking, oh, I don't know, maybe there is a place?
No, not at all. And I did try it briefly. The difficulty with keeping up with all the platforms and anything that requires video is that although the clip you're going to see is 30 seconds, a minute long or whatever, you've got the hour of setting up video equipment before, and then things aren't, unless you can have a dedicated space that's always set up for you to go straight into it, which, I mean, I don't, certainly. I'm lucky enough to have a music room, but because I'm doing four different styles of music, everything that I do, I have to completely redesign it. So, yeah, doing a minute's clip on TikTok is probably going to take me about 3 hours. I've got other stuff to do. So I may go back to it, but it's hard to do it off the cuff for anything that I feel would be worth sharing.
It's cost benefits. There's only so much you can actually spend on the social media before you have to delegate and designate other people to actually do the thing for you, which is very important. It's all good. Yeah. Okay, let's return back to the album, because we are going to have a listen as we sort of wrap up to The Shrug one more time, because I think, you know, like all good music, you should actually play it twice from that point of view. The album itself how long do we have to wait before we can access the full album and purchase Hearts Full of Grace?
So the full album will be officially released on Bandcamp on June the 1st. Currently, you can pre-order it there, and three of the tracks are available to listen to. This track, The Shrug, the next single, which is going to come out on May the 4th, which is Relentless, which is more of an electronic funk track, so that's quite different to this one. And then 2 weeks after that will be the Two Steps, which... is much more down the kind of fusion route. I think I described it as if King Crimson had written Giant Steps and then had a cover version done by Genesis, maybe it would sound like that. So there's lots of different moods that I want to explore across the album, but those will be the three singles, and those will be out on all the streaming platforms. So if you're a Spotify listener or an Apple Music listener, you will be able to listen to those tracks there. But the full album will just come out on Bandcamp on June the 1st.
Al, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with yourself on the Midrick Drive as far as magical music and jazz is actually concerned, certainly in education in more than ways than one. I've got two final questions for you. They are standard. So first of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Oh, yeah. No, it's been fantastic. Thank you for talking to me and for asking interesting questions.
Well, we do our very best. I mean, otherwise it would be pointless. It would be pointless questions. Al Swanger's pointless beauty with interviews from which are pointless as well and are pointed every direction. It's the same as no point at all, as I believe Harry Nielsen once said. But there we are. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to welcoming you back again? Will you come back and talk more about jazz and your fantastic work in the field?
I'd love to. Yes, anytime.
Let's wrap up then with another hearing for The Shrug. So I won't ask you how you're feeling because you'll just shrug. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.